Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the publication of the annual report 2020 of SFC Energy AG. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press the star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Dr. Peter Podesser, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Lisa, for the introduction. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the presentation of our audited consolidated figures for 2020 and to the publication of our annual report today. Together with my colleague, Daniel Saxena, we will present you here the numbers for 2020, give you a perspective into the year, and also, I'd say, an actual assessment of the overall situation. We will start with our presentation as usual, and then be very happy to answer your questions after opening the floor. Before we go into the numbers, I think first and foremost, a couple of words on the impact of the pandemic situation as of today, and our countermeasures in place. As you can imagine, I'd say health and safety here of our employees, of our customers, of our suppliers and their families have been the utmost priority since the starting of this situation, starting of the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic here about a year ago. We have seen some cases so far. I think for God's sake, they all have, all related individuals have recovered properly. Happy about this. And we have, let's say, stringent hygienic measures in place, and distancing is overall practice. Home office, mobile working is standard practice. But naturally, we have a big part of our teams who have to be present physically because you cannot build systems, you cannot build products, you cannot run laboratories without being present here for this entire year. And therefore, we are adapting our measures here. Maybe not to some of the hectic or nervous moves we see now on the political side, but we are adapting here, I think, with the proper and necessary foresight. Overall, we have rapid testing in place now also for about 12 months. We do this voluntarily, we do this proactive, and we hope to be able to continue to operate as we do right now. Until today, and knock on wood, there was not a single day where we had to shut down one of our operations. Seeing the recent 2-3 months, we have excellent loading in all our factories. We are running overtime. We even had to go into some of the Saturdays here in the last couple of weeks to make sure we get product out the door. We will make sure we do whatever is within, let's say, our means to continue to protect your health and safety of all individuals and all parties related. That's a day-to-day practice, and we are checking the situation here within the management teams, nationally and internationally, on a daily basis. It is modus operandi so far and part of our day-to-day work. And now getting back really to the numbers, but we really feel it's important that you know how we address this. The first statement here, I think, it's correct, but still important that the audited consolidated financial statements confirm what we published as preliminary figures mid of February a couple of weeks ago. If we look into the overall business of last year, naturally, we were also impacted by the COVID-19 situation, by countermeasures to the pandemic here, from travel restrictions that did not only impede our sales activities, but also simple fact is that installations could not take place in different countries because of hard lockdown measures. We also saw the demand for our products impacted in some of the end markets, not all of them, fortunately, but some of them. We also saw an unprecedented demand here for our civilian fuel cell products, methanol and hydrogen fuel cells. We see this overall driver of the business here continuing into the current year, into the first month of 2021. I think we made good use of the time. We launched new product lines, our fifth generation of our EFOY platform in autumn time, and some of the variations now until Q1 of 2021. We also launched our hybrid power package here, EFOY fuel cell plus EFOY lithium battery. We even got a nice award here, an innovation award in autumn time for this package here. And we implemented the strategy that we also announced not too long ago during 2020 by expanding our partner network here for regional expansion of the business. And I think a lot of groundwork, a lot of foundations solidified and laid out for a sustainable and good growth here in 2021 and also on the medium term. In terms of measures, I think also in connection with COVID, it is important to mention that, yeah, we laid a strong emphasis on solidifying the supply chain, on also pulling back some of the supply chain parts here to the vicinity, naturally with some investment on the working capital side, higher levels of stocking. This is a measure that is implemented also for 2021, where we have already released purchasing orders here for material until Q3 of this year, which we feel is important to make sure we have no disruption in the supply chain. Overall, yeah, we see 2020 as a solid performance overall, but naturally with different impacts of business performance, especially on revenue and on segmental level. And let me go into this. 53.2 million of revenue. Yeah, undoubtedly, this is a decline to the year 2019. 9.1% decline from 58.5 million the year before. The biggest impact we saw in two segments. The one is the defense part of the business, where I think we had to accept that the hard shutdown measures in some of our international markets like Israel and India simply led to significant delays in the procurement. We also naturally saw on the decision-making, including also our home market here in Germany, obvious delays because people were, A, not used to mobile working. Some parts of the public procurement agencies in different countries were not equipped for a mobile working situation, and therefore delays that were up to 9 month delays in decision making. The deviation significant in this segment, 60% down in terms of revenue here, from almost 8 million to roughly 3 million, 2.99 million, disappointing. From almost 7.5, sorry, to 3 million. Disappointing, no doubt. One positive out of this, we have not lost projects here and programs here. In most of those programs, we are still single source. And we see, and Q4 numbers have shown this, we see a rebound here and activity here on national and international level since Q4. Oil and gas, also a challenging environment, especially in Q2 and until mid of Q3, where simply demand was down, the oil price being impacted by an oversupply situation, a correction there of OPEC plus measures, and a rebound here also in demand in Q4 led really to a solid development since August timeframe, better than we anticipated this in our scenario planning here for the end of last year. We are still down 19.6% in this segment, which is significant here to 17.65 million of revenue. But seeing the continuous momentum, especially since August, September last year and also into this year now with an oil price solidly holding above $60 and the Western Canadian Select, which is important for us on a high level, even beyond $50, leads to a better than anticipated demand here in this segment and a positive outlook, especially here for 2021. Industrial electronics, power electronics business, we knew very early in the process that there was a reaction by big customers here. Our biggest customer, Thermo Fisher, they simply reacted also quickly. Some of the call-offs of Q2 and Q3 were reused and postponed. But a strong rebound. Despite this, still, the segment was down roughly 21% year-on-year to 13.58 million. But seeing the rebound since Q4 and also the momentum here in the early part of 2021 and the outlook, I think we are seeing not only, let's say, growth here, I think what we detect is that our customers have accustomed and have adapted to the situation as we ourselves have done too. So we live with the COVID impact and we live with the measures in place and we have adapted our business models to this. So also here, I think a strong outlook after a good rebound in Q4. And then, well, coming to, let's say, the star of the segments, the clean energy and mobility segment here, very robust and resilient and resistant here to the COVID situation over the last, not only the 12th month of 2020, but also the first month here of 2021. We see a regionally broad demand here, but also in terms of products, methanol and hydrogen fuel cells. We generated growth here of more than 60% last year. If we only take out the industrial customer base, we see a growth that is beyond 71%, almost 72% year-on-year. And if we take out our hydrogen products, I think it's important to note this. This was the first year of having the product commercially out, so driving the business here from initial sales in 2019 to more than 2 million in 2020 is a factor of 10x, so very, very dynamic. That is, I'd say, something that we see still ongoing in 2021, and we see a continuation here of the rebound in Q4 overall, and clean energy and mobility being simply as dynamic as we have seen it throughout the entire year of 2020. We did implement, actually, some learnings out of 2020. At the end of this year, we talked about already the strengthening of the supply chain, but we also did some changes in our business segmentation. Whereas we have been reporting until now the end of the year 2020 in four segments based on end market segments, we have prepared for a change here. And as of the year 2021, we are shifting this to a technology and product-based segmentation where we expect higher transparency by segmenting the business into the fuel cell and strict fuel cell related business and on the one hand and the power conversion, the power electronics business on the other hand. We reduce the number of segments here from four segments to two segments. Naming is clean energy and clean power management, whereas all fuel cell related business goes into the clean energy segment. All power electronics and related systems business goes into clean power management. We also expect, I would say, an increase of efficiency besides, let's say, transparency, but we also think we can avoid some of the, I would say, granularity that made it sometimes a little difficult to make a proper assessment on the overall performance of the individual businesses. With this, I would like to hand over to Daniel to lead you through the earnings development of 2020.
Thank you, Peter. So let me guide you through our earnings and the cost positions that we had in 2020 after Peter already gave you detailed information on the revenue development. Maybe let me quickly touch one more time on the regional contribution or distribution of our revenues. It hasn't changed significantly. Europe and Germany, Europe excluding Germany and North America, pretty much on the same level, contributing each 36%. So these remain our two largest regional markets. Notable is Asia. Asia has been increasing to contribute now 12% to our revenue. That's a development that we've seen all over the year, and that's a really positive development as we see it. If we look at our gross margin, the paradigm that we mention all the time remains where we say we want to take advantage of the ample opportunities that the market offers us, but at the same time we really want to safeguard our margin level or even margin expansion opportunities. And if we look at the entire group, we were able to keep our gross margins nearly stable. We're looking at 33.7% in 2020 versus 34.4% in 2019. In spite of the difficult market environment that we had and in spite of the shift in revenue contribution from the segments, we had, as Peter already mentioned, much lower revenue contribution in the segment defense and security, which tends to have very strong gross margins. That revenues accounted only for 5.6% in 2020 versus 30% in 2019. But on the other side, as Peter already mentioned, we were able to push our clean energy and mobility segment sales up, which also have a very healthy margin. So clean energy and mobility revenues were really able to compensate for the lower defense and security revenues, which then ended up in the nearly stable margin. If we quickly want to touch base on the margin in each segment, clean energy mobility, we remain stable with the margins 42.8% versus 43.2% in the last year. In the oil and gas segment, we had slightly lower margin. That results of slightly lower margin across all product families, but also, as we mentioned in our previous quarterly calls, this year for the first time we have allocated the non-oil and gas fuel cell revenue in North America, in SFC Canada, to the segment clean energy and mobility. And that tends also to be higher margin revenue. So that's another explanation why the margin in oil and gas has decreased a bit. If we look in our industry segment, Peter already mentioned that also, overall we have pretty defensive gross margins in that segment, mainly because we do have frameworks, maybe we do have long-term design in with our customers, so there's a margin, you know, even improved a bit, the gross margin looking at 32% in 2020 versus 30.4% in 2019. And then last but not least, defense and security, much lower margin, unfortunately, 33.4% versus 44.7%, and that's really because of the product mix that we had and also the lower activity and sales activity that we were able to develop given the pandemic. Looking at our EBITDA and EBITDA adjusted, which really are the key financial performance indicator for us in addition to revenue growth, our reported EBITDA was negative with $1 million compared to $2 million positive in the last year. But as we also always mention in our quarterly calls, what we're looking at is the adjusted EBITDA. Our adjusted EBITDA gives us the possibility to really compare apples with apples. We remain with three adjustments. The first adjustment that we do to our EBITDA is the stock option, the expense for the stock options program for the management, which is non-cash for the time being. The second position is really acquisition-related expenses. And the third one in this year are restructuring related expenses. To quickly dig into that, the DAR expense that we had, stock option expense that we had in this year was $3.5 million versus $1.4 million in the previous year. The higher expense, you know, good for all stakeholders, is also due to the much increased share price. Of course, the DAR expense or the stock option expense is linked to share price development. Acquisition-related expenses, about 300,000 euros. So a smaller position, and then we have other smaller position about 200,000 euros as a restructuring expense in context with the production relocation from the Netherlands to Romania. So that's just a small portion. So if you adjust our group EBITDA, then for those three effects, then we have an adjusted EBITDA of 2.9 million compared to 3.6 million in the previous year. That translates into an adjusted EBITDA margin of 5.5% compared to 6.2% in the previous year, a bit lower, but I think still, you know, given the overall circumstances and market environment, we did very well by really keeping our operating costs in line. Depreciation, amortization, total 3.5%. Please note that, you know, out of this 3.5%, 2.1% is really IFRS 16 related, and roughly 700,000 euros is advertising our capitalized R&D, so that is in line with our asset light overall balance sheet. Operating expenses, I already mentioned, we were able to really keep them in line and also adjust to the environment and the challenges we had. Little surprising, our total marketing expenses are lower than last year. We're looking at 12.1 million versus 12.4 million in the previous years. In the sales and marketing expenses, we also have ZARS, stock option expenses, in the personal expenses in that line item. So if we'll take those ZARS expenses, non-cash expenses out and just look at adjusted marketing expenses, we're even 12.6% lower than in the previous year. It has to do, of course, with, you know, lower travel activity, trade for expenses, but we're still very active in sales and marketing. R&D expenses, total cost of R&D in the last year were about 6.7 million euros. That splits up in basically three positions. It's 2.8 million euros, which we expense in the P&L. So the position, the R&D expense that you find in our P&L is 2.8 million. 3.1 million is R&D expense, which we capitalized on our balance sheet. And then it's about 800,000 euros cost that we had with JDA's joint development agreements, which, you know, however, we get or will expense to certain customers. So total cost is 6.7 million. That's pretty much on the same level as in the previous year. R&D in relation to revenues for 2020 is 13%, a bit higher than in the previous year. It has to do, as Peter mentioned, we are rolling out new product generations. We are developing our hydrogen, we're further developing our hydrogen platform, and also we are developing our power platforms. In the long term, nothing has changed. You know, we're looking at R&D as percentage of revenue around, you know, 6, 7% in the long term. In the near term, it's probably going to be a bit higher. G&A expenses, really not a big change. It looks unadjusted for our ZARS expenses that also flow in the G&A expenses, 20% higher. However, once again, if we take the stock option expenses out of G&A, then we are 2% higher than in the last year. G&A expenses are not as variable, obviously, as other expense items. Quickly, just giving you a brief overview and run you through our balance sheet. Fixed assets, you know, looking at intangible, 60 million euros, out of which about 7.8 million are Israeli goodwill, and 7.8 million is capitalized R&D. Our PP&E is 10 million. If you look at it, you'll see it's the right of use. So IFRS 16 is 7.7 million. We're still asset light. We don't have and we don't need a lot of equipment and machinery, even though we keep investing in those items. total CapEx, if you look at this, was 7.3 million, and the biggest portion is capitalized R&D, as I mentioned before, with 3.1 million euros. Cash and net debt, our cash position has increased. We have a healthy cash position, basically due to the capital increase we did last year. We are looking at cash freely available of about 31.5 million euros. Our financial debt, on the other hand, has reduced from 6.5 million to 4.5 million. Our financial debt is primarily working capital lines that we have for SFC Canada as well as SFC Netherlands. And then there's a small portion of a term loan, 210,000 euros remaining. That is being reduced over the year. So that all results in a net cash position of about 27 million euros. Our equity ratio has increased, also due to the capital increases that we made in the last year. So we're looking at 64% versus 55% in 2019. Quickly guiding you through the cash flow, operating cash flow before change in net working capital amounted to 3.5 million euros, a bit lower than in 2019, where we looked at 3.9 million euro. Our net working capital has increased 3.9 million euro, by 3.9 million euros, We also mentioned that in the previous quarter calls, we are keeping a healthy level of inventory in the current pandemic situation. We want to make sure that we don't have any supply chain interruptions. And Peter mentioned we are working and producing full steam. So our inventory level, raw materials, tend to be higher than in the previous year. And we'll probably keep it at the level as long as the pandemic is around. On a positive note, our accounts receivable have decreased by roughly 700,000 euros, but also our account payables have decreased by 3.1 million euros. So with taxes, this results in a negative cash flow from operating activities of 600,000 euros. Cash flow from investing activities, 4.3 million euros. As I mentioned, 3.1 million is capitalized R&D. And financing activities, 15.4 million euros. So the total change in cash is 10.5 million euros. Thank you. With that having said, I would turn it back to Peter.
Well, thanks very much, Daniel. So where do we stand in terms of 2021 expectations, and what is the midterm expectation? Summary here, really optimistic for 2021. We had a dynamic start, and we are experiencing here dynamic demand in the first 3 months, talking about this on the 25th of March. And midterm, well, we are determined to deliver. I think it was this week already a major step forward here, announcing the first and major cornerstone that is set already for our expansion in Asia, which is expected to contribute to a massive part to the midterm growth here, to the scenario that we published a couple of weeks ago. But let me start with the expectations now for 2021. Optimism justified by a dynamic environment, and we are assuming that the environment stays as we have been experiencing right now until now last week of March. What we are not assuming here is a massive deterioration here of the COVID environment and let's say the resetting of measures like we experienced it in parts of our markets last year with hard lockdowns and shutdowns. But saying this, I think we have adapted to the situation. We are expecting 15 to 30% growth. The bandwidth, as you all know it, is mostly driven simply by the lumpiness of some of our defense business. Where do we expect the growth to come from, particularly driven here by our clean energy segment? The clean energy segment is primarily formed by the clean energy and mobility segment, as we reported it until now, the defense segment, and parts of the oil and gas segment. But at the same time, we are also expecting maybe not that aggressive growth, but significant growth here from our clean power management, the power electronics business. Growth contribution across products. Well, the new EFOY is being accepted exceptionally well. I would say first couple of weeks, especially of our end consumer business, is unprecedented, outstanding. And well, the hydrogen business, what we see here is that the demand here for this kind of product is rapidly growing. We see RFIs, RFQs coming in, especially here for the telecom and telecom backup applications. We are talking here about multi-million RFQs here regionally, not only limited to Germany, and we are not only talking about, let's say, the continuation of the well-working German government program. We are in a supply situation right now. We are talking here also about telecom operators and tower companies showing up as potential customers. So, and regionally, not only in Europe, but also in North America. So 61 to 70 million is the expectation we are confirming here again for 2021. Naturally, with a positive impact on profitability, the range of EBITDA underlying between 3.5 and 6 million also unchanged in terms of expectations, as well as the underlying EBIT, where the range is between minus 900K and 1.6 million here for 2021. Going beyond this year, it is clear for us that we can reaffirm our midterm plan. We published this a couple of weeks ago, showing the different elements, mostly organic elements to this in terms of regional rollout of the business, talking about collaborations here in Asia as a first step. The level of business that we are targeting here in 2025 or in the framework of those 5 years is ranging up to 350 to 400 million with an associated increase of the EBITDA to at least on an underlying basis 15% of EBITDA. The demand for our hydrogen and methanol product is driven by a macro environment supported naturally by government programs now coming really into place and starting to be executed in an unprecedented format here for this transition to a hydrogen-based energy supply. If we look at the segment that is important for SFC, we are talking here about the stationary energy market. We are talking here about the replacement of an incumbent technology. We are replacing, as we speak, diesel gensets. The theme we are operating under, we call it goodbye a diesel, and not for cars here, but for the stationary power market, which is a multi-billion market today out there on a worldwide level. Why do we expect to benefit from this, and why do we expect to benefit from it over proportionally and early? Because we are one of the first ones having industrial grade and mature products out in the market. We have an established installed base of 50,000 plus products in the field and 100 million operating hours recorded. We have an advantage in timing, and we are determined to make use of this advantage. And I think the partnership here with Toyota Tsusho expanded now into big parts of Asia, Southeast Asia, with Vietnam, Thailand and Philippines now as a first step, but also the biggest market for sustainable, clean energy, China, is a significant step for us, and we are, as you can feel right now, I'm excited, I'm happy. We implemented this in a pretty short period of time with our Japanese partners. We have learned and learned to work together in the last 5 years in their home market in Japan. We are now capitalizing and start to capitalize on a sales and service network, a logistics network throughout the entire continent there, and SFC's part of it is contribute the right product, contribute the right next level technology. So with this, yeah, both parties see the level of 100 million revenue as the target level here and the target hurdle for 2025, and therefore naturally this is a big part to our midterm plan. So to speak, it's the first pillar erected here for this plan here for the next 5 years. Next are to come, and this one now is in implementation. We have already projects in Vietnam. We have initial project work already in the other countries. And we are working on a segmentation in China with our existing partner there that we do not discontinue to support. Therefore, in China, we now have two sales arms into the country. Overall, summarizing, yes, 2021, 25th of March, fully on track under full utilization of our capacity. Biggest concern right now is that we experience shutdowns of manufacturing. We still have a couple of days in this quarter, and we really want to use every single day, including this week's Saturday, to make sure we can produce what is ordered and needs to be shipped. And for the midterm, yeah, the first step is taken. We now have to go and implement the first one here with our partners in Toyota, and naturally we have to take the next steps. All this leads to the conclusion here that we are, yeah, on a good path here to contribute significantly here on the society's journey here to net zero. We don't call it a race to net zero, but it is a defined path. With this, I'm handing back to Lisa and looking forward to get your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now begin our question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 01 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before it's your turn to speak, you can dial 02 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from Carsten von Blumenthal, First Berlin Equity Research. Your line is now open. Oh, I think we lost this participant. The next question is from Anne-Margret Crow, Edison Group. Your line is now open.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I've got two. The first is on gross margins, and you mentioned being taking care to keep the gross margins up. I'm wondering if you were seeing any margin pressure on fuel cells. And then the second question was regarding expansion in China, and whether there was any expectation that you would start doing some part of your production within China in order to be eligible for some of the larger contracts, because you know there seems to be an expectation from the Chinese government that if you are going to get large contracts, you do have to have some production capability in the region. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne-Margret. Let me answer the gross margin question. We don't see any gross margin pressure beyond the, let me put it this way, normal pressure you get from customers in all industries, in all segments, in all products. So what we see is that we can maintain our gross margins. We are working on expanding our gross margin because our product, once again, we're not selling necessarily simply based on pricing, but really on the value or on the unique as USPs of our products. So short answer to your questions, no, we don't see any significant gross margin, but of course we do have to negotiate with our customers.
Right, thank you.
And then, Margaret, good morning. Peter, talking about, I'd say, production and local content, I think we see those expectations in various parts of the world right now, and part of our joint venture planning and discussion here with Toyota naturally also is comprising the entire value chain where it is not only China, but it is also, I'd say, potentially Southeast Asia that will see some, I'd say, local contribution here in terms of value chain assembly first, and then I would say full stage production. And well, the most imminent one, and the one where we see most stringent requirements, maybe also because our business is already more mature in this market, is India, where Mr. Modi phrases this in a very friendly way as an invitation, make in India, but at the end of the day, the requirement is very clear. We do already significant government programs there, but also civilian programs. We just published one of the smart city projects here, replacing again diesel gensets here for smart traffic solutions for emission control. We will have to cope with this, and planning is ongoing, and expect to implement, I'd say, first steps definitely in 2021.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Thank you.
Now the next question comes from Carsten from Blumenthal, First Berlin Equity Research. Your line is now open.
Hello. Can you now hear me?
Absolutely. Morning.
Perfect. Happy to hear you. I don't know why it didn't work first time. So my feeling is the outlook for this year is pretty good despite the pandemic. You mentioned that Q1 21 has a high momentum. Have you got a feeling, if you compare it to Q1 2020, which was more or less unaffected, but also perhaps also already affected by the pandemic. Do you think you could beat this this quarter on a year-on-year basis, or is there still some upside you have to reach?
Well, this is Peter, Carsten. Well, 2020, we have to say, was for us not affected at all. So this was really pre-corona levels. Without releasing too much at this point in time, I think we feel well on track to get to pre-corona levels here in Q1 2021.
Perfect. That is helpful. You mentioned the new generation, the fifth generation of the EFOI product. Perhaps this is a good opportunity to explain us the main technical advances in your products so that we can get a feeling what is now better than in the generation before.
Yeah, certainly. At the end, the overall target, as it has been for the previous generations, are, let's say, performance, higher power, more compact form factor, and at the same time, longer run times, which leads into, let's say, higher efficiency and cost reduction in terms of operating cost for our customers. So we have increased the run time here by one third, which is really significant, and we keep it stable in terms of overall pricing, which leads into a real efficiency gain here for our customers. So this is the real tangible hard performance factors. And the other one is really connectivity, remote accessibility. We have just issued also the EFOI cloud solution here at the end, giving access to or for our customers to their products to run a fleet of systems here to optimize the operation. And from our side here, we are preparing, as we speak, also an addition to our business model by, I'd say, selling naturally part of this cloud solution to our customers on a monthly or yearly basis. So we did this acquisition some time ago of our German partner Udomi here, including his remote accessibility platform, and now we have brought this onto, let's say, the latest state of the art, and it is also simply turning it into a or part of the business model into a continuous cash flow based model.
Excellent. That is very helpful. Another question regarding competition. My feeling is that you are very well positioned as probably the most advanced industrial producer of fuel cells. On the other hand, we see a very strong growth at the moment, meaning that a lot of other players may try to get into the business, or other players keeping further developing their products. Especially the question is in Asia, in China, do you see stronger competition? Do you see that your IP is protected enough, especially in the Asian markets now in your cooperation with Toyota? So how do you see the development in coming years there?
Yeah, I think it's an obvious development, and you're hitting all those points there. There is significant resources now and investment flowing into the sector, which has not been the case as all of those here on the line who have been with us for a couple of years have experienced with us. I feel, and we feel as a company, this is a good sign, because our approach here to competition has not changed. Being the only one supplying a technology or offering a technology on the practical level gives you the initial hurdle with your customer, where the customer asks you, well, why are you the only one? What is the issue here? What is the problem? So you need at least a year to convince them that although you're the first one or still the only one, this is working. This will change over time, fortunately, but therefore also the adoption is simply driven by this, and entry acceptance hurdles are eliminated. So we expect here, I always use the same picture. If you are the only small icebreaker here, you can create a small canal. If a fleet of vessels and icebreakers comes in, you're creating a bigger wave and a broader way. This, I think, is what we expect. Well, our task now is to stay at the forefront of this next generation products, exactly targeting at this, coming out, let's say, with new features, being more efficient, also being cost effective for our customers. Well, and IP, yeah, we see naturally competitive product concepts coming up. We still, and Daniel has also said this and quantified this last year, we've spend significant money here in terms of R&D for those next generation products that some of them release. But for example, next generation of hydrogen products is in the works. Jupiter 2.0 is in the works, where the power electronics is developed here in the Netherlands, where the fuel cell, we do it here. Expanding our IP portfolio as we speak, what helps is definitely also the licensing agreement in place with Atkore, but it's an area of constant alertness and will be constant investment also from our side. But we feel competitive situations also drive market growth. And therefore, this is definitely better than we experienced it, let's say, a couple of years back. It's now in our hands to stay competitive, and we have to prove this.
Maybe adding to what Peter just said in terms of supply chain and also, you know, gross margin cost of material. Of course, as the industry grows, the supply chain is developing, the materials are developing faster if you got more players in the market. And as we all know, you know, it tends to be cheaper to buy in a drugstore than buying in a pharmacy. So you know, there could be also some positive effects, and we expect those positive effects in terms of bill of material and supply chain and material availability.
Excellent. Thanks for that. One last question. We probably see now the worst part of the pandemic in coming weeks and months until the vaccination campaign will help. My feeling is that regarding supply, you are safe. Regarding production, you do everything you can do. So the remaining part is, do you fear any backlash from demand, or is, as we have seen it last year, the sector in a way beyond the pandemic, because everyone looks into the future knowing how urgent it is to buy these products, to establish it. So what is your feeling regarding the current situation of the pandemic for Q2?
Well, as mentioned, in terms of assessment and assumptions for our market expectation guidance for 2021, if this remains as is and we see maybe some more severe measures in place, I think we are well covered. If we see naturally full shutdowns in different countries coming up, well, this is not part of our assumption set here for the guidance. But overall, I think if we take especially the civilian part of the business, our customers and we ourselves, I think we have adapted to the situation. A worst case scenario cannot be, let's say, now avoided in terms of, well, if you have cases here in some of the production facilities, you need to shut down, you need to adapt. As said before, we really do whatever we can. We have constant adaption of our measures, voluntary rapid testing in a broad sense, and not only since a couple of weeks, but since 12 months here. So I think we do what we can, and if the environment is as we experience it right now until the end of March this year, we are well prepared, and yeah, growth is expected in the range that we published.
Excellent. Peter, Daniel, thank you very much for taking my questions.
Thanks, Carsten.
Thank you, Carsten.
Our next question comes from Lothar Jimmansch, Oddo BHF. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Two questions. Actually, two subjects, multiple questions for one subject. Looking at your gross margin outlook for 2021, you say you assume a slight recovery. Does that mean you don't see any recovery in the oil and gas and defense gross margin for 2021? Let's take that one first. And there seems to be some kind of echo on the line. Or is that me?
Maybe it's you, Lotte. Good morning. But I think technically we need to simply accept this at this point in time. But let's try. If you can you understand us properly?
Yes, I can understand you. But if I hear myself talking as well.
Okay. No, we have a clear line here, so we can understand you very well. And maybe on the gross margin, Daniel, you want to take the lead here?
Yeah. We don't see recovery in gross margin. Frankly speaking, I think two trends that we will see two things that we work towards is, first of all, as I mentioned, you know, we're always looking at gross margin expansion. That's the first thing. And there may be, as I also mentioned, certain effects coming from the market that will help us on that. Second thing is we're looking also in the oil and gas segment at more long-term or average gross margins, which, you know, of course this year is not what, with the whole pandemic environment, also in the oil gas terminals in that segment, and that this is the margin that we will see for this year and the next year. So once again, answering your questions, we don't see the margins at the level as they are in 2020. We'll see them going or increasing, going up, and also, you know, it's probably good to look more at the average margins that we had in the last 3 years. And then, as I mentioned, you know, we our target is to increase our gross margin, clearly. And that's what we're working on.
Okay, so, sorry, Peter.
And security, on defense and security, this is very, very natural. We expect product business to recover, which we didn't have in 2020, and therefore you will see an impact on the gross margin automatically.
Yeah, but then I would expect that the gross margin would increase more than slightly. So that's why I was asking the question. I would expect that the defense product margin will be higher, as you know, in Germany, etc. And therefore the German, therefore the defense margin to increase in 2021, and therefore a more than slight improvement in gross margin in 2021.
Maybe we remain cautious here on the outlook, but let us deliver Q1 and then reassess it.
Okay, understood. Thanks. Then a question on your Toyota agreement. I think that's a very good one, of course. I had some more questions on the details of the contract, if you can share anything. Are there any volumes or prices agreed in this, or price increases? Does this have a special term? How many years? And looking at the press release, you specifically mentioned that you have an exclusive agreement for the South Asian areas, but not for China. Is that correct? What's the difference in the contract?
Well, without being able to release all the details, as we are under strict confidentiality here for either side, but it is, let's say, what we published is what reflects the approach here. In those markets where we have not been active with an established sales channel so far, Southeast Asia, we are happy to grant this exclusivity. We have learned here in Japan that Toyota is a simply a high-performing and reliable partner for a market where you start business development and you have to invest. In China, we have been building a proper and well-performing partnership here over the last 3 years with our partner Beijing Green Century, especially in the wind market, big inroads into the market for fuel cells. And we think there is enough space in this huge market to do a proper segmentation, and therefore this is not exclusive in China. In terms of agreement commercially, We have basically copied what we have in place for Japan for the last 5 years, which at the end helps us to sell our product on comparable gross margins here to Japan compared to all the other parts of the world. So it's not, let's say, a massive price reduction that we need to swallow here.
Thanks. That helps a lot. Then one question on your medium-term target. I saw you mention the Ronald Berger consultancy report in your guidance statements. Looking at the medium term, especially I was curious on what kind of assumptions you take on growth and what kind of, and this is the main question, which value chain part are you looking at the hydrogen part? If you assume growth for the hydrogen one,
well,
is that purely the stationary, or do you also take other value chain parts into account?
Well, at the end, yeah, the Roland Berger study quoted is one of the data points out there. As we speak, we see more data coming up, which naturally helps. It's also supporting actually some of those government programs, not only in Germany, but also on EU level now. We also saw now the change in overall direction in the US, which is not even, let's say, factored in from our side too much. But at the end, the core part has not changed. What we are saying is that, in order to reach net zero and climate targets, we need more renewable energy. We see that hydrogen is being selected as the element of choice for transportation and storage. But then the fuel cell converts the hydrogen back converts the gas back into a flow of electrons at the point of use with the individual customer group, being an individual, being an industrial, being infrastructure and critical systems. And our core market is the stationary power market. We are not planning to now be and jump on the bandwagon here for mobility, trains, cars, trucks. No, stationary is big enough. This is a multi-billion market still growing for diesel engines at this point in time. And we are best positioned to capture market there. And this is where we anticipate the growth. And this is also full alignment here for our Asian strategy, for example, here with our partners in Asia.
Very clear. Thanks, Peter and Daniel.
Thanks, Lotte.
Thank you, Lotte.
This concludes our Q&A session. I will hand back to the speakers.
Well, with this, we thank you very much. We've taken a little longer than the hour anticipated. Thanks for your time you take to listen to us. Thanks for the questions. Well, stay with us. If you have additional topics you want to address, do not hesitate to reach out to Suzanne, to Daniel, or myself. As a complimentary information, the new investor presentation is online as of today for those of you who want to have a look at it. Thank you. Looking forward to a very dynamic 2021 and stay healthy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.